coming to you from sunny Orlando, Florida. Welcome to the Paper Stack Podcast, where we cover current topics in the note industry, give you tactics for your note business, and talk with industry leaders to make you a better note investor. And now, your hosts, Brett Berkey and Rick Allen.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Paper Stack Podcast. My name is Brett Berkey, and this is Rick Allen. Mm-hmm. And we're back for another episode for some knowledge bombs via Rick Allen. And I will ask the questions that you may want to hear or that you're thinking of. So, yeah, how you doing?
Doing good, man. I'm excited. Got my green shirt on for Masters Week.
No, I thought I missed St. Patty's Day or something.
No, it's that special time of the year if you're a golfer that it's Masters Week. I got this actually in Augusta when I went.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. That's cool. Unbelievable. This place is unbelievable. I can't wait to watch it. It's like one of my favorite times.
Isn't there like a saying, like, I forget what it was. It's something about, oh, that's what it is. This is the time of year, God, maybe I shouldn't bring this up, but out of all the times of the year for men to get vasectomies, it's this weekend. Because the wives were like, well, I guess you kind of just sit around and do nothing. And so they would plan it on this weekend.
On the weekend for Masters, yeah, to watch. That's funny.
So they can just sit there and watch it. And I was like, oh, that's...
Oh, I used to watch nonstop, but now I have, you know, I got a softball tournament this weekend I got to go coach, so I won't be doing that. Well, I'll tape it and watch it, but pulling Tiger Woods is there. Hopefully he doesn't withdraw. Hopefully he can complete a round, complete the tournament.
Yeah, Patrick Franz is there too.
Oh, is he?
Yep. Oh. I made a joke with him. I was like, I know you're that good enough to play. And so, I know he hasn't responded yet, so. But all right, but so we got a topic that you wanted to talk about this week, which is good because I
did. I want to talk about how bidding on non-performing loans has changed.
Yeah, I'm interested.
Over sort of this spectrum. It's like certain, it's almost like chapters. And what made me think about this is we were just out in Dallas talking with somebody who's going to be using our enterprise product. And we were discussing bids and bidding and going through all that stuff. And we kind of went down into the weeds in a rabbit hole talking about bidding and how we needed to make sure that we were able to supply the total payoff. Because bidding, people are bidding on that now based on total payoff. And right. So if you kind of look back and we go back to when the meltdown happened, you know, 2008, you know, so certainly starting in 9, 10, 11, really heavy in 12, all in there, you wound up with this situation where you had the principal balance of the loan, then you had the total unpaid balance, so it's whatever the balance was when they stopped, plus all the past due interest, fees, escrow advances.
Right?
You had that value also. And then you had what the actual house was worth. And so that if you were to look at a stair step, it would be, well, the house is worth here, the principal balance is here, and the total balance is here. And so when you were bidding on assets, you weren't even really considering what the principal balance or the balance. I mean, you would look at it. It definitely played in there, but really because everything was so upside down.
You were bidding on the value of the house.
You're bidding on the value of the house.
Right, because so, at that time you could probably, that was your goal, was to get it back.
It was to get it back, but if it was a non-performing loan, you're like, well, I can't bid based on the principal balance because the principal balance might be 200 and the house is worth 125.
Right.
So you're like, I gotta buy this. At that time it was like 60,000 or 55,000. 50,000. Who knows? It was really low, you know. My first one was 10 cents on the dollar, actually, or 9 cents on the dollar. But the point is so for this period of, we'll call it 2009, where values were going down, but it was really, they kind of bottomed out, I would think, around 2012. And they started to creep back up. And so when you're bidding, you're constantly bidding on what's the value of the house.
Right.
Because that was a security. And then what happened is we came to this point where the principal balances at the time they stopped paying and the values started to get level, like, right?
Okay.
So, I mean, this is maybe 2000, and this is not universal, but in a lot of the market, maybe 2018 values are coming up, 2017, 18. You're getting to this point, you're approaching it, maybe 16 in some areas, but we're... The balances are sort of starting to get
level. Okay.
And then at that point, you're really looking at, okay, am I bidding on balance or am I bidding on the UPB? Because some of them would be the balance is here and the value is the balance versus the value, not the UPB. The unpaid principal balance, UPB, versus the asset value.
Right.
Right? Or in other markets, it may have been like this. Okay, maybe it's just a little bit different, or maybe they're dead even.
Wasn't the idea to always bid which one's higher?
No. Well, if you bid it off which one's higher when it was in the meltdown, you would have been bidding off of this.
Yeah, okay.
So there came this time when you were looking at these things and you're like, okay, well, the unpaid principal balance, and this is non-performing stuff, and the value, they're getting close.
Right.
And so then there was this, okay, what am I bidding off of? And, you know, you would kind of bid at that point whichever one was, like, if the value of the house was lower, you're kind of bidding on the value of the house. If it were the UPB were a little bit lower and the value of the house is higher, you're at that point you're probably bidding on the balance, right? Mm-hmm. And that kind of carried us through to maybe 2020, maybe, you know, started in 2020, I saw it. End of 2019, 2020, I started seeing it, where people would start looking and start, you know, sellers were saying, here's the total balance, you might want to consider bidding on it. And you would see a couple people, you know, you get 100 loan portfolio and you might get one or two that are bidding on the
balance.
The total payoff.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right? Mm-hmm. Because they're like, well, I really like that house, or I'll bid on that, I bid a little bit higher. And so now what you're really seeing is, and it's not exclusive, but people are taking into account what's the total payoff.
Yeah.
And they're bidding on that total payoff.
Okay, why?
Because now the values on the assets have gone so high, right? Okay. We had this rocket ship acceleration on the value of homes.
Right, right.
Interest rates were low. Homes got just values went up. People could afford more house.
Right, right.
With the lower interest rates. And so what you saw is on these non-performing loans, now people are looking at it going, ooh, well, I'm not going to bid on obviously the value of the house if it's a non-performing loan, because it's way over what the actual is actually owed.
Right.
And I'm not going to bid on the principal balance, because maybe the principal balance is, say, 300 and the total payoff is 400 and the house is worth 600 or 575 or whatever it is.
Right.
So what you've seen is you've seen people, and it's not, again, it's not like, it's a majority, but instead of one out of, you might see like 30 or 40 or out of 100 are looking at that going, ooh, I'm bidding on the total payoff.
When do you make a distinction though? Because that's a loan.
Right now, it's really on a loan level basis.
Right.
You got to really fall in love with the house. You got to see something there. You have to look at it and say, ooh, I know this is in a hot market to where, you know, I want to get that house back, or I'm trying to really turn this into a performing loan, or whatever it's going to be. Everybody's going to have their different buying criteria, but you're looking at that saying like, look, if I'm going to bid on the total payoff, it's because I really want to get that, because I know other people are probably going to bid off the UPB.
Right.
Now, there's some things to consider if you're going to go that route.
Okay.
So one of the dangers of bidding off of the total payoff is if you take it to foreclosure or you're going down that route, you have to be able to prove that total payoff, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to be able to look at it and say, I got receipts, the interest and, you know, past due interest fees, that stuff's usually easy to prove with, you know, that's math equations, right?
With the
payment history, and then just the sheer just facts of the loan. Mm-hmm. Where it gets a little difficult is if you've got an elevated total payoff and some of that's attributed to maybe taxes, insurance, stuff like that, you actually have to be able to prove that up. And so I've had personally on stuff that we purchased where we were actually bidding, probably at that time it was based off of the UPB, maybe it was bid off the house, not the total payoff. We got to foreclosure and they're like, look, we can't locate this other $17,000.
Cool.
Well, if at that point, I think the total of the arrears and all everything was like $133,000. And the $17,000 wasn't going to make a difference between what we were getting. The house wasn't worth that much, so you could knock the $17,000 off. Say fine, just get rid of the $17,000 and send that in what you can prove, and let it sell at auction, and we're good, because we're not going to. That total payoff was still going to be well over what the house is worth. right? Now you look at it and you say, wow, houses are so much higher. I got to make sure I can document prove every red cent, every dollar, because if I'm bidding off of that in hopes that I'm going to get that back, if there's a large chunk of stuff that you can't prove, well, now you could be really upside down and that could hurt you. So it's just interesting to see how things have changed over the past.
That's interesting. I mean,
so 10 years, really. You could almost break it up into 3-year chapters.
So does that go into your due diligence? Like, when, so let's say I'm bidding on a non-performing loan.
Yeah.
Like, I'm looking at the payment history. I'm looking at the servicing notes. I'm looking to make sure there's, you know, what's up with the title. Make sure there's no taxes, HOA.
Of course, you're doing all that stuff. But then
now you're adding this, like making sure
this is going to fall into the, you've been awarded the bid or you won.
This is like secondary.
This is your secondary due diligence.
Okay.
You're probably not doing this
before you win.
Prior to closing, in your next level of due diligence, once you're like, okay, I've kind of reviewed the paperwork, and it'll be a little bit different. Like the enterprise world or the institutional trading, the way it works is it's more of a, hey, here's the tape, look at it, bid, assuming everything is as I present it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what their bid is, called an indicative bid.
Right.
And then from there, your bids are awarded. From there, data rooms are set up, you're piling through, you're looking at stuff, you're making sure your values are there. You've ordered BPOs. Usually the way it goes is like, look, a bid warded data room set up. You do your preliminary search. You start looking everything, reviewing servicing notes, payment history, all that stuff.
Mm-mm.
And you get to where you're comfortable with all of that. Then you order your values. When your values come back and everything checks out, at that point, you go ahead and order your title, because you got to make sure the values are there before. You don't want to order title and then order values. Title could come back clean and then your values are screwed.
Mm-mm.
And you're like, that's not going to work. I just spent money on something I didn't have to. So that's usually the waterfall of how due diligence goes. But in that second round of due diligence, or that first round if you're in an institutional trade, when you've got the data room set up and you're looking at the payment histories and the total payoff, you go through there and you go, see, I need to see, how can we prove up all this stuff? And if the loan was performing and it went non-performing and the person selling it is who had it when it went non-performing, probably not going to be too difficult to do.
Right.
You buy something that's a legacy loan that's been traded 4 times, and then you're like, well, I need to see how we can prove this up. I need to see the receipts or something showing that this was paid.
Are there a lot of legacy loans still around?
You see them, yeah. You definitely still see them.
And also, too, explain to the people watching this video that might be new what a data room is. Because you said it like everyone should know it.
Data room. It's essentially a virtual Dropbox, or it's a digital room or a digital folder that they're gonna put in all the due diligence documents for the collateral file, payment history, servicing notes. If they've got a title report, a BPO report, if they've got the origination documents,
And data rooms are on a loan level?
Yes.
So each loan has its own data room?
Each trade has its own data room, right?
And inside of a trade, there's going to be 20 folders, and one of those folders are going to be more folders with more stuff, and those are the mini data rooms within the big data room.
Right, and so the nice thing about what this...
The big daddy room. No.
Yeah, so the next version of PaperStack, this is really cool, because that's a nightmare to set up.
Oh, I imagine.
It is. Yeah. So the next version of PaperStack is our enterprise version, which will become PaperStack as you see it today. But it will, basically what you'll do is once you go through, you have an auction, you award your bids to the winning bidders, and you go to set up your data room, you just drag and drop, like for your trades, you just drag and drop the whole, like if it's one portfolio before you award your bids, you drag and drop all the files. So it could be one folder that has 40 files of 100, 40 loan files. So each loan has its own file. You just drag it, drop it in there, and PaperStack will grab it and put it with the appropriate asset.
That's going to blow some people's
minds. So then when you go to award,
yeah,
you go, okay, these 3 went to them, these 10 went over here, the rest are over there. You just award them, boom, it creates your data room. Boom, it creates your data room. Boom. It also will go through and it'll index stuff and look at it and identify it. And then if you're on the buying side, you'll be able to ask it questions.
That's going to be really cool.
Hey,
what about the file name? Are we going to change that? Because are the file names usually organized? Or is it like usually like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, J?
I don't know that the file names will be necessary. We'll be able to, for the main things, note mortgage assignments, allonges, title policy, modification, stuff like that, we'll be able to grab it and identify and index them. The rest of the stuff, I don't know if that's a receipt for taxes or insurance or whatever. Yeah. That stuff will remain with the file names given, but we'll be able to at least index the main ones for their payment history, servicing notes.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's really good. So, you know, kind of reeling that back in, we went off there on a little bit of a tangent. But, yeah, so that's how, that's really how things have changed with the bidding. And it's very fluid. And
you think you're going to see more of that?
Do I think we'll see more people bidding based on total payoff?
Yeah.
I think you're going to continue to see that right now.
Is that a way for somebody that's maybe trying to have an angle that others don't if they're bidding off total payoff?
Of course. That's why people were doing it. They're like, wow, everyone else is standard operating procedure bidding off the principal balance. I'm going to go ahead and bid off of the total payoff.
And people haven't caught on?
Oh, they have, but some. But you got to understand, like I said, there's risk that carries risk.
Right.
You could get into a situation where you're like, oh, I can't prove this amount of the payoff. Therefore, it's, you know, I just lost a lot of profit or I lost a chunk of profit. So.
But it seems interesting that you're not committed to that total payoff amount until your second round of due diligence where you can actually prove the arrearage. So you could almost fade your bid, which means to reduce your bid amount, after you've already been in, you're down here. These people that were also bidding on it might have already been like, I'm gone, they're on another thing. And now you're just left with the seller like, hey, wait a second, you can't prove this amount. And then you can reduce that and you still win.
You could, yeah, of course. And that's obviously, that is something, and that's not really necessarily like a strategy. That's just the way it works.
Yeah,
hey, if we can't prove all these numbers, then they're not really usable numbers. We got to go off what is actually usable.
Right, right. So, interesting. That's cool.
Yeah, okay. So that's, things have definitely changed, I think.
You think we'll be seeing more non-performing notes here in the future?
I think so. I think I've seen, I've been thinking so for a while.
I know, that's what I...
People, you know, everybody's been like...
Like the boy that cries wolf, man.
I mean, people are just like, I just don't know. You know, I see, you know, we see six pools of NPLs go out. And it's like, oh, I haven't seen that many NPL pools go out.
Right.
And then I think Fannie just did a 200, and it's actually going on right now. They've awarded bids. They're supposed to close this month at some point. It was like $254 million.
Yeah, there's that other company that's, you know, the MIAC Analytics.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're doing huge non-performing pools, but people on, say, PaperStack won't see that for another year.
No, it'll funnel down. It's the funnel process, right? So find out who wins those things. Goes, hey, do you have any small balance stuff you want to get rid of? Let me take a look at it. We've got people, you know, that's the sort of what's going to happen.
Right, just ping-pongs its way down to, gets to single one-offs.
It does, it will. And, you know, it's just interesting to see how that plays out. But it will be good when those things start moving through the pipeline.
Right.
So.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Cool. Well, I learned something new today.
Yeah, that's
hopefully
a little,
you did too.
Little shorty one there. So.
Yeah, that's good. I guess that's pretty much everything for this episode. Again, if you have not checked out the PaperStack Academy, you're doing yourself a disservice. We have a lot of cool stuff in there, calculators, all kinds of guides, there's simulators, there's, of course, a lot of education.
It's really, really robust.
It's beefy, and then we just keep building, and your comments get answered. When you ask a question inside of there, we get it immediately, comes to our inbox, we can jump over, answer your questions pretty much on the fly, unless it's at nighttime or when we're not in the office. But yeah, I mean, your comments are answered, you get a private Facebook group to ask any questions you want. Yeah, we're there to help guide you along the way because we're trying to make better PaperStack users that can buy more notes. So we're selfish in that sense. We're trying to teach you so we can have more users. But
yeah,
it's a win-win. So if you haven't checked it out, it's academy.paperstack.com. Go there and check it out today. Any final thoughts? You got any bets placed for the Masters? Are you going to drop some money on this?
No, I don't gamble on it. I just watch it. I just like to watch it. It's such a good tournament to watch. It's so iconic. It's one of the few tournaments that are at, you know, especially of the the only major that's at the same course every year.
Yeah, I don't think my brother watches a sports game without betting. I think he just
really.
Oh, he's always like, we're gonna take the over under on this and that. Like it makes it, I guess, entertaining if it's not your team or whatever. Just but.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, he's one of those guys that back in the day when a new type of lottery ticket would come out, he'd go out and buy the whole roll. He'd spend like $800 to $1,000 and he'd buy the whole roll. And I was like, why do you do that? He's like, because they're trying to get you hooked. on this new game. So the first couple like months of the new game, they're going to have a lot of winners, and the odds are in your favor. And so
do you win?
Yeah, he'd always rake in. He just had to sit there with his buddies and drink beer and Friday night, and they just scrape it off and put the winners to the side and watch TV. And they go, and they're pretty much always successful because they're trying to stir up advertising and, yeah. So that's, he doesn't watch the podcast, so he's not going to know that I said that. But
yeah. Does he still do it?
I don't know if he still does. He did that in college. That's how he made some of his money, was just doing stuff like that. He's very smart financially, like with this, numbers and stuff.
Is this the one, the financial advisor?
Yeah, this is the one that's a financial advisor. We'll figure. So, but that's that. I guess we'll see you on the next one. If you have your own questions, remember to leave them in the comments, and I will ask him those questions and get your answers. So, that's it for now. We'll see you soon. See ya.
Are you new to the mortgage note industry? Have you been wanting to learn the step-by-step process to purchase your first mortgage note? Well, you're in luck. We've convinced our CEO, Rick Allen, to break down everything he knows about mortgage note investing. Through a series of 50 videos, you'll get everything from start to finish of where to purchase notes, how to purchase notes, and all of Rick's investing techniques he has developed over the many years. From performing note tactics to non-performing notes, Rick gives you everything he knows about investing. Bonuses include our glossary of industry terms, Rick's own proprietary calculators he created to evaluate notes, discounts from our partners, our Rolodex of vendors, a private Facebook group, along with a lot more. We've packed so much content into the Academy to take you from beginner to expert in no time. To learn more about the Academy, go to academy.paperstack.com/welcome. Again, that is academy.paperstack.com/welcome.